The following Dharma talk was recorded in September 2013 in Excelsior Springs, Missouri. It is one of three recordings from the retreat called Awakening with Insight, Cultivating Concentration and Mindfulness, taught by Shyla Catherine. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your email sent to info@midamericadharma.org. The retreat teacher, Shyla Catherine, is the founder of Insight Meditation South Bay in Mountain View, California. She has practiced meditation since 1980 with more than 8 years of accumulated silent retreat experience. Shyla has authored two books, Focus and Fearless, A Meditator's Guide to States of Deep Joy, Calm, and Clarity, and Wisdom Wide and Deep, A Practical Handbook for Mastering Jhana and Vipassana. Find out more about Shyla at www.imsb.org.
There's a Calvin and Hobbes comic strip that I quite enjoy. And you know Calvin and Hobbes, right? Calvin the little boy and Hobbes the stuffed tiger who is not so stuffed when it's just Calvin and Hobbes in the strip, but as soon as an adult comes into the scene, it's back to a stuffed tiger. So anyway, Hobbes approaches Calvin, who's digging around in the dirt out in the backyard. And Hobbes says, "Why are you digging a hole?" And Calvin says, "I am looking for buried treasure." And Hobbes says, "What have you found?" And Calvin says, "A few dirty rocks, a weird root, and some disgusting grubs." And Hobbes excitedly says, on your first try." And Calvin says, "There is treasure everywhere." I think this is a great teaching. There is treasure everywhere. And so tonight's talk is titled Contentment. What is enough? Of course, one of the central themes in Buddhist teachings is dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. To deeply recognize how all conditioned things are unsatisfying. The insight into dukkha is the realization that satisfaction is never going to be found by grasping changing material and mental experiences, no matter what those experiences are in our lives. Grasping them is not the way to happiness. But because of the language of suffering and unsatisfactoriness, it kind of starts to seem like a gloomy teaching. Maybe Buddhism is a bit pessimistic, and if we practice too much, we might end up depressed. And so I want to ask a related question. What would be satisfying? What would be enough? It's a great question to ask ourselves in the midst of the meditation. Is this moment enough? When the attention is resting just for a clear awareness of whatever is happening in the present, maybe the subtle sensation of the belly rising, or maybe just a little sound that's heard, or perhaps a little twinge, a rippling sensation in the muscles. Can we ask ourselves, is this enough? Or is there a subtle pull to something else, something more exciting, something that might happen next, something that will make a better story, something that will somehow be better? Sometimes this takes the form of, if only. If only I didn't eat that donut at breakfast, then I might, whatever. Be concentrated, be mindful, be happy. If only my knee didn't hurt. If only I was able to schedule that massage appointment before the retreat. If only my partner didn't say that ultimatum right before I left the house. If only I had brought a better cushion to sit on. If only my neighbor didn't call. If only I had a more comfortable bed or slept, had a better night's sleep. If only my son could find a job. If only my boss didn't, whatever. I mean, it's endless, the if onlys. If only imposes some condition on experience. It expresses a resistance to what is actually happening by indulging in a desire for something else, a hope for something else, imagining or expecting anything that is something other than what is now. If only describes a fantasy of a future in which we will be fulfilled. It anticipates something that will never happen, because just as now, in the future, there is dukkha. Sometimes we demand an awful lot to be happy, and that demand imposes expectations that are unrealistic on our experience, and then blinds us to the incredible blessings that are currently abundant. Sometimes we're so caught in intense grief for what is lost that we miss what is still in front of us. What are the blessings that are still in our lives? Calvin and Hobbes were both so happy with those treasures that they found in the dirt. But most of us are a little more difficult to please, probably. Even when we reflect and we realize that we are incredibly blessed with an abundance of possessions, friends, education, the basic comforts that are needed in life. What do you need to be content? When the Buddha was asked what was the essential, the essence of his teaching, if he had to give his teaching in brief, what was the briefest version of his teaching? You know what he said? He said, nothing whatsoever should be clung to. Nothing whatsoever should be clung to. Clung to as I or as mine. And in a slightly different phrasing, it says, nothing is worth getting or being. Now let that one hit you. Nothing is worth getting or being. Does this teaching stir you? I have to admit, the first time I heard this line, it was back in the mid-80s, 1980s, and I was quite angry. What do you mean nothing is worth getting or being? I mean, I was barely 20 years old. There was a lot I wanted to get, and it was a real movement in my life of wanting to be. Even coming to the Dhamma, coming to the meditation retreat, was wanting to be spiritual, right? And so on one of my first retreats, I think it was that first year that I started to sit retreats, I heard this teaching, nothing is worth getting and being. And after that Dhamma talk, I didn't get up mindfully. I bolted up and I stomped out and I went to my room and I said, the heck with this silence. And I took a pen and a paper and I made a long list, page after page after page, of things that I wanted to get, that I wanted to be. Well, this is probably very natural at that age. But then after I had written my long list, I started over at the beginning and I thought, is this worth getting or being? And I crossed it out. And then the next one, well, it's a nice thing. Sure, it would be great. It'd be great for me. It would be great for the world. It would be great for others. But crossed it out too. And I went through my whole list, crossing things out when each one I reflected, was this worth becoming for? Was this worth attaching to? Was it worth getting or being? So much human energy is spent in this movement of having and becoming, getting and being. It's all too easy to live in a state of generalized greed and selfishness in this world. And it's not that we're going to be more selfish or more greedy than the next person. Quite the contrary, probably we will be a lot less greedy than our neighbors and a lot less selfish than most of our colleagues. So it may not seem very problematic, but still if there's an inner demand for getting and being, our hearts will be discontent. But contentment should not imply that everything is going to be agreeable and pleasant. Can we be content to receive difficulties, challenges, obstacles with grace and even appreciation? Content to be challenged, content to have our values and our ethics tested, content to challenge the stability of our minds. Perhaps content to bear our portion of the suffering and the grief and the loss and the pain in this world. Do you make enough space in your hearts and in your life to experience that portion of pain that has arisen for you? Making enough space to feel it, to open to it, and to know it. In Letters to a Young Poet, Rilke wrote, "Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us once beautiful and brave. Perhaps everything terrible is in its deepest being something helpless that wants help from us. So you must not be frightened if a sadness rises up before you, larger than any you have ever seen. If a restiveness like light and cloud shadows passes over your hands and over all you do, you must think that something is happening with you, that life has not forgotten you, that it holds you in its hand, it will not let you fall. Why do you want to shut out of your life any agitation, any pain, any melancholy, since you really do not know what these states are working upon you?" Many things happen in our lives, gain and loss, success and failure, pleasure and pain. I think we all know that it's unrealistic to pin our happiness on getting only pleasure, success, and gain. If we look for satisfaction in external conditions, when those things are the way we want them to, we are sure to live in suffering. Because we would be resisting all the other events, the things we dislike, we might find ourselves seeking distraction by grasping sensual pleasures, indulging in fantasy. And sadly, then, we might miss the opportunities that are unfolding before us and miss the chance to discover a deep and abiding freedom with whatever is present now. Poonjiji used to tell a story many, many times. He liked this story. It's a story of a king. But this king had no heirs. And so as he grew older, he realized that he needed to pass on the kingdom before he retired. And so he decided to hold open interviews. Anybody was welcome to come and apply for the post, kingship. And so he had his ministers make the announcement and open the gates at 7. And he waited in his office for the applicants, to interview the applicants. So in the morning, a line formed outside the palace gates, and when the ministers opened the gates at 7, they were first ushered into a series of rooms, because the king had no caste or social criteria. Everybody was welcome, farmers, laborers, poor people, rich people. And so to help every applicant meet the king at their best, they were invited to enter into the baths, to wash and bathe and soak their limbs in the hot whirling whirlpools and water, to receive massages from the trained masseuses, and to use the various rejuvenating oils that were provided. And then the next room was filled with clothing, racks of great, of beautiful wardrobes, fine silks from Benares, and beautifully spun wools from the mountains. And they were invited to wear whatever clothes they wished. And then they could pass through into the next room, which had a banquet, a feast, so that nobody would have to enter their interview with hunger. And so they were invited to eat plenty of delightful foods. And while in the banquet room, there was music and song and dance. And about 5 o'clock, the king was wondering, why has nobody come for the interview? So he comes out and finds his ministers and says, didn't you follow my orders? Didn't you open the gates at 7 and welcome anybody throughout the kingdom to apply for this position, to inherit the kingdom? And the minister said, sire, indeed, we did follow your commands. But as we guided people in through the gates, some of them enjoyed the bath so much that they spent the day taking baths and massaging their skin and sunning themselves out in the bath area. And then when they left, they just took the little soaps and the towels as souvenirs. Now, there were others that went through the baths, but they enjoyed the clothing so much that they spent the entire day dressing up and prancing around, praising each other's appearance in the various clothing. And we noticed that when they left, many of them had on many layers of clothing. And still more went through the clothing room. And after they dressed, they were enjoying the feast and the music and the dancing. Right up until shortly before you came out of the out of your office. And they left asking for doggy bags to carry the hors d'oeuvres and the treats and the desserts back home to share with their families. Nobody passed through to enter the interview. Most people are easily distracted. Distracted by desires and pleasures, entertainments and comforts, projects and plans, ideas, relationships, fantasies, possibilities. Entranced by our desires, we might leave this life with the equivalent of soaps and towels or little souvenirs, rather than inherit the kingdom that could be offered to us. And so periodically we might consider our commitment to the spiritual life. Do you really want to be free? Or do you actually want simply the temporary entertainments and comforts of worldly living? Are you using the forms and methods and practices of the spiritual life for liberation, to free the mind from the forces of greed, hate, and delusion? Or is the spiritual life just another way to create a bit more comfort of getting and being? It's so easy to be seduced into complacency and confusion, to fall short of our highest aspirations. This sometimes happens when we compare. When we compare better than, worse than, or equal to. We might compare ourselves to ideals, to fictions, to stories, to how we used to be, to how we wished we were, to how we think somebody else is. We might rank ourselves socially. We might rank our meditation, our wisdom. We might rank our samadhi and decide if we're the most concentrated person here or the least concentrated person here. We might rank our wisdom. Is there any way in which you rank yourself in the spiritual life? Comparing and ranking is a sneaky kind of corruption, because it sometimes seems like it's discernment, like there's some accuracy to it. But what it does is it distances ourselves from what is actually happening. Because the very movement of comparison is flawed. It keeps our attention from a simpler question, which is simply, what is happening now? Is this enough? Enough to be present with, enough to be mindful of? Is what is happening now worthy of our attention? Is it enough to awaken to? No matter how we compare ourselves, better than, worse than, or equal to, the comparison will always be wrong. What is real? What can we count on? What can we actually know? Most people expect enlightenment to happen often to somebody else or in some exotic way. And yet there are plenty of stories of simple people experiencing awakening in simple circumstances. Nothing exotic, nothing fancy, and yet a profound transformation occurs. Are you looking for a different life? Or do you sense the possibility of awakening within your lives? Do you need something more spiritual to be happening? Something more exotic? Something better or different? Or can there be a contentment with the opportunities, the moment, our mind, our lives, our actions, our intentions, as they're manifesting right now? Are we happy to be present with what's actually happening? Are we content with this moment as it is, with being as we are. I don't know how many of you watch Star Trek, but you're probably familiar with the android named Data and the and the hologram doctor on Voyager. Now, Data, of course, is made out of circuitry as an android, and the hologram is made out of force fields and photons. And there are many episodes in Star Trek where these characters explore what it means to be human. Because as circuitry and force fields, they provide a kind of contrast to humanity. What makes somebody human? These characters, of course, it's a fiction, but these characters all, they grew, they felt, they learned, they had ambition, they had a sense of morality. I think to some extent we are exploring our own humanity. We all construct a sense of who we are through contrasts and comparisons. This comparing in Pali, the Pali term is called mana, which is usually translated as conceit, because the conceit I am often develops in contrast. I am better than, I am worse than, I am equal to. But what makes us human? Well, in the Buddhist tradition, they would ask, what makes one noble? What makes us more noble than just a organic biochemical reaction? The Buddha taught that what makes for nobility are particular practices or actions. And they are the practices of dana, generosity, of sila, virtue, of samadhi, the development of mind, and panya, of wisdom. Practicing generosity, we work very directly with this question, what is enough? What is enough to give? What is enough to retain and to save? How much and in what conditions does giving feel generous? Does it feel as though we're not just doing something, but we are practicing something? When does giving feel right, noble, and extend our spiritual practice? Sila, virtue, is also a noble practice, living with a deep commitment to cause no harm, to self or others, to take great care with our actions of body, of speech, and of mind, so that we live with integrity, with honesty, with a sincere relationship to life. Mental development, samadhi, and wisdom, panya, are also noble practices. They cultivate the steadiness and the understanding that allow us to free our minds from ignorance and embody a purity and a clarity of wisdom. Although generosity and sila might seem like ordinary practices, I think their power should not be underestimated. They may not sound as impressive as deep absorption and concentration or profound liberating wisdom. But until our sila is purified, the mind is not going to have the stability to transform and to awaken. The development of sila is more than being a nice person. These noble practices purify the mind, They purify the mind of even the underlying tendencies towards greed, towards hate, and towards delusion. Action is important, what we do in our lives. And sometimes we can do so much more than we bother to do. Sometimes we hold back and live slightly withdrawn. We might keep a distance from the suffering that we see around us. It isn't that we don't care. I think we're often just a little busy, preoccupied with our own routines. And then we miss many opportunities to help, to connect, to serve, and opportunities to let go. What do you need to experience more contentment in your life? I think it's a delusion to assume that we need anything to experience contentment or to be happy. We don't need wealth or health or pleasure, relationships, social status, fame, furnished homes. In the suttas, there's an interesting dialogue where the Buddha is speaking with Mara, the tempter. And Mara says, if you're so enlightened, why don't you turn the Himalaya into gold? And the Buddha replied, even if all the mountains on earth were turned into gold, it would not be enough to satisfy even one man's greed. What is enough? What would be a cause for contentment? Is there anything that we have to get? I've been repeatedly struck in my life that some of the happiest moments were times when I had the least. I can remember back in the mid-1980s, I was practicing on a retreat in Barre, Massachusetts. And those of you that were meditating back then. This is, by the way, before the renovation. So don't hold this against the Insight Meditation Society. But my room was a peeling linoleum floor with a box that was kind of like a stand for the lamp. Two beds, if you could call them beds. They were 1.5-inch foamy mats that had been used for a very long time and were probably bought used because they didn't have any oomph to them. And the mats were just on the linoleum floor. And the sheets were torn and had holes in them and were worn really thin. Clearly, they were the dregs of what had either been donated or picked up at some garage sale somewhere. That was the roof. It was all there was. And my roommate and I shared the room. Our little mats were maybe 2 hand widths apart. And there we were meditating for many months. And I remember sitting in my room and at one point realizing how incredibly happy I was and opening my eyes and looking around and thinking so clearly that happiness has nothing to do with having anything at all. The room couldn't be more bare if it was a mud hut. And then there was another time, a decade or so later, when I was practicing in Thailand. And I had a very similar realization. I was practicing with a group of monks and nuns and lay people, and we were doing what was called tudong practice, where we walk in the jungle. And we just carry a few supplies, a water bottle. What I used to sleep on was a black garbage bag, and I carried two because if it was cold at night, I used one as a blanket. A few little pieces of string and a mosquito net because there was very bad malaria in that jungle. And we slept, we just walked all day, and then we stopped where we found a river and would collect water and cook with the river water and then keep walking the next day. Many of the monks did it barefoot, but I tried that, and I only lasted about one day, and then I put my sandals on because otherwise there was no way I was going to keep up. And I can remember being so tired. And the food was like boiled rice and chili, and I can't eat chili at all. And a few bitter leaves that some of the lay people would collect from the forest as we walked. And that's what we ate for weeks. I was so happy. I mean, I was really, really happy. And again, I had nothing. Just this little day pack with my water bottle and a few little things. I think you've probably all had some experiences where you knew very clearly that happiness had nothing to do with the stuff around you. I know many people who've actually had their house burned down, you know, through one accident or another, and they lost everything that they had. And it didn't affect their happiness at all. And so periodically, when we think of contentment, we can ask ourselves just, what do we need to be happy? Remember those moments when you were camping. Remember those moments when you were fine with nothing. Let those moments help you untangle the chronic grasping and desire that our culture tries to entangle you in. Perhaps all we need to be content is to want what we have, to want to be where we are, to want to experience what we're experiencing anyway. We can practice wanting what is. And then there might be a real possibility of living with contentment because we need nothing. It's important to remember this periodically when we think we don't have enough. Usually that's when the comparing mind has risen up. We don't have enough money because we know somebody else who has more. We don't have enough stuff because we know somebody else who has something that we don't. We don't have enough energy because we're tired earlier in the day than we used to be. We don't have enough strength or enough courage, or we haven't heard enough teachings, and this is the big one. We don't have enough time. I like to encourage renunciation practices. I don't think you have to ordain to practice renunciation or go off to some Himalayan cave and be a renunciate. I think as lay people, we can practice contentment with little. We can let go and practice renunciation and restraint. There are lots of little ways that lay people can enjoy, and I do mean enjoy, experience the joy of renunciation. I had one just very little minor experience once where I was on another retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts. And my teacher, it was a very difficult retreat this particular period of time. And it had been a couple of months that were really grueling for me. And there was one moment of the day when I felt like I could just experience some momentary comfort. Around 4 o'clock, I would go and make myself a cup of tea, and I would hold the warm cup of tea and sit and look out the window at the snow and drink my cup of tea and then go back to the grind. And my teacher asked me to renounce my tea break. And I thought, no way, it's only tea. It's not even coffee. It's freely given. There's nothing wrong with this. It's perfectly fine to have a cup of tea. And my mind started to justify. It refused. It started to justify all the reasons why I needed my tea break. And there was such a flurry of restless thoughts as I left that interview and walked down the stairs, that by the time I got to the bottom of the stairs, I knew I had no choice but to renounce my tea break. Because I asked myself that simple question. Did I want to be free or did I want to drink tea? I have to admit I thought about it before I answered. But I did decide that I would abandon my tea. And it was perfectly fine, of course. So I decided to do it for a week. Just a week. That's all. Put your strength around it. And as lay people, when we practice renunciation things, I do suggest you put a time period around things so that you can explore them in a way that keeps the exploration alive. And so for that week, I decided no tea. And come 4 o'clock the next day, craving arose, craving for tea. It was time for tea. And I remembered, oh no, renunciation, let it go, restraint, and then experience the joy of restraint. Okay, fine, fine. The second day, craving arose again. Interesting. I hadn't even realized how much craving there was for a cup of tea. You'd think I was English or something. And then the day after that, craving arose again, but each time restraint. It's okay. Not a problem. I can let this go. And then after a couple of days, the tea maker, the hot water heater broke and nobody had tea. I was already practiced. I could see other people suffering and I realized, oh yeah, yeah, this really can be suffering. So as lay people, when we practice renunciation and restraint, I would encourage you to pick some innocuous little things in your life, something that you in some weird way rely upon but maybe don't actually need, and use the opportunity to refrain from engaging in it as a way of recognizing the craving and working to abandon the craving. Because it doesn't actually matter if we have a cup of tea or not. There's no suffering in drinking a cup of tea. The suffering was in the craving that I hadn't been seeing. The suffering was in the relying upon it, was the building a sense of comfort and security through getting, through having, through craving that experience. So no doubt each of you might have something that you can explore in your life, or even this evening or tomorrow here, or when you go back home, to explore letting go of something on a daily basis for some period of time. Munindraji, some of you may have read Munindraji's book. It's a book about Munindraji. It's quite lovely. He said, just be simple and easy about things. Just be simple and easy about things. What isn't simple in your life? What's the extra? What do you think you need to be happy? And can you let that go and find a happiness free from dependency on anything that changes. And so I leave you with this question to contemplate. What is enough? What is enough to be happy? What is enough to be free? What is enough to awaken to?